The teachers were, of course, forbidden from mentioning the interview by Educational Decree No. 26, but they found ways to express their feelings about it all the same. Professor Sprout awarded Gryffindor 20 points when Harry passed her a watering can. A beaming Professor Flitwick pressed a box of squeaking sugar mice on him at the end of charms, said shh, and hurried away. And Professor Trelawney broke into hysterical sobs during divination and announced to the startled class and a very disapproving Umbridge that Harry was not going to suffer an early death after all, but would live to a ripe old age, become Minister of Magic, and have 12 children. But what made Harry happiest was Cho catching up with him as he was hurrying along to Transfiguration the next day. Before he knew what had happened, her hand was in his and she was breathing in his ear. "I'm really, really sorry. That interview was so brave. It made me cry." He was sorry to hear she had shed even more tears over it, but very glad they were on speaking terms again, and even more pleased when she gave him a swift kiss on the cheek and hurried off again. And, unbelievably, no sooner had he arrived outside Transfiguration than something just as good happened. Seamus stepped out of the queue to face him.
"I just wanted to see," he mumbled, squinting at Harry's left knee. "I believe you, and I've sent a copy of that magazine to me, ma'am."
If anything more was needed to complete Harry's happiness, it was Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle's reactions. He saw them with their heads together later that afternoon in the library, together with a weedy-looking boy Hermione whispered was called Theodore Knott. They looked around at Harry as he browsed the shelves for the book he needed on partial vanishment, and Goyle cracked his knuckles threateningly, and Malfoy whispered something undoubtedly malevolent to Crabbe. Harry knew perfectly well why they were acting like this. He had named all of their fathers as Death Eaters.
"And the best bit is," whispered Hermione gleefully as they left the library, "they can't contradict you, because they can't admit they've read the article."
To cap it all, Luna told him over dinner that no copy of The Quibbler had ever sold out faster.
"Dad's reprinting," she told Harry, her eyes popping excitedly. "He can't believe it. He says people seem even more interested in this than the crumple-horned Snorkax."
Harry was a hero in the Gryffindor common room that night. Daringly, Fred and George had put an enlargement charm on the front cover of the Quibbler and hung it on the wall so that Harry's giant head gazed down upon the proceedings, occasionally saying things like, "The Ministry are morons," and "Eat dung, Umbridge," in a booming voice. Hermione did not find this very amusing. She said it interfered with her concentration and ended up going to bed early out of irritation. Harry had to admit that the poster was not quite as funny after an hour or two, especially when the talking spell had started to wear off, so that it merely shouted disconnected words like "dung" and "umbridge" at more and more frequent intervals in a progressively higher voice. In fact, it started to make his head ache and his scar began prickling uncomfortably again. Two disappointed moans from the many people who were sitting around him, asking him to relive his interview for the umpteenth time, he announced that he too needed an early night.